It's Only a Matter of Time. By Matt McBride. Laris Carson was probably the greatest artist of the 28th century. The artwork he'd produced during his prolific years was sensational. He'd invented a new genre, celestial imagery, and the paintings he created were considered modern masterpieces. So it made perfect sense to write the final thesis for my advanced doctorate about his life and work. The only problem was that 40 years ago, in his late 70s, and at the peak of his prominence, he'd suddenly dropped off the grid. And no one knew why. I made it my mission to find out. And to reveal the reason in my dissertation. Which turned out to be one essay I'd never finish. In case you're not from planet Earth, and are unfamiliar with our history, I should first explain that since we achieved the technological singularity in the 22nd century, no human has worked. Hyperintelligent machines took over all mundane tasks formerly performed by people. This led to the new Renaissance, when the arts became the whole purpose of living. Many new and technically advanced art forms were quickly developed, and almost as quickly discarded, when people turned back to the old methods. Writers threw away their computers and picked up pencils. Sculptors reverted to hammers and chisels, and visual artists replaced pixels with paintbrushes. Painting was my passion. Art history my field of academic study. And the works of Laris Carson were my inspiration. I found his sweeping vistas of galaxies, nebulas and constellations, stunning. His paintings had a three-dimensional quality that drew me in, and made me feel as if I was traveling through the cosmos without ever leaving Earth. And, judging by his popularity, most inhabitants of our solar system felt the same. Several weeks of probing produced no trace of Carson, and I'd almost come to the conclusion he must have died. Then a chance hit on my university's supercomputer gave me a clue to his whereabouts. I found a shipping note for an annual delivery of supplies to an L. Carson, on a small unnamed protoplanet in the Andromeda Galaxy. After that, things fell into place. And I used most of my life savings to secure a berth on the next delivery transporter. The robotic transporter had the latest tachyon drive, and utilized traversable wormholes, but it still took 7 months to reach the freezing desolate rock where the old master had made his home. As the only human passenger, the cybernetic crew made a big fuss of me. I could only hope that Carson would be as welcoming. After all, he'd be stuck with me until next year's transporter arrived. Carson's home was the standard terraforming dome used on dozens of colonized planets. And the man himself was standing inside the airlock when I rode in on the top of a motorized pallet. I'd seen depictions of early cave-dwelling humans. And that's exactly how he looked. A skeletal figure, wrapped in a tattered fake fur coat. Long gray hair and a straggly beard. His deeply lined face reflected every heartbeat of his 120 years. He pointed at me, then yelled angrily. "Who the hell are you?" He wouldn't speak to me for the first 2 days, and I feared for his sanity as he mumbled incoherently to himself. He'd been separated from civilization and synapse preserving drugs for many years. He was irascible and uncommunicative, but, gradually, he began to thaw. On the third day he offered me some stew he'd made from vegetables grown in the dome's hydroponic garden. By the end of the week he was asking me about news from Earth. After a fortnight he shrugged and conceded that we'd just have to make the best of things for the coming year. When I eventually told him the reason I'd come, he went into one of his frequent rages. He called me a damned fame whore, a glory hog, and an egomaniac. I let him rant for a couple of days. I was getting used to his mood swings. When he eventually calmed down, I brought up the subject again. "You have millions of fanatical followers who made you rich and famous. Don't you think they deserve to know why you suddenly disappeared?" Carson thought about that for a while. He must have been in one of his rare reflective moods. Or maybe he realized he was nearing the end of his life. "Come with me," he said. "I want to show you something." The dome had several compartments I hadn't yet visited. Carson led me to one that had all the appearance of a geologist's lab. Some of the equipment looked familiar. An X-ray diffraction machine and a spectroscope occupied one bench. On another, a vintage microscope was flanked by mortars and pestles. Items I'd only seen in books. A stack of trays, filled with rock samples, stood against a partition wall. "This is what I've been doing for the last 40 years," he said. "You're studying geology?" "No. I'm trying to create Chromanova." And then he told me the whole story. The cosmos was my inspiration. The universe my muse. I was always fascinated by the blending of colors, and the way nebulas were constantly changing, due to the light emitted by dying stars. At first I used powerful telescopes to study the vistas of space I wanted to paint. Then, when I became more successful, I took commercial trips to other worlds, so I could get more of a sense of the fundamental existence of the macrocosm. My fortune grew, until I could afford to lease my own interstellar robotic craft, and I began to take long trips on my own to explore the galaxies. I had my starship equipped with a studio, so I could paint what I saw, just like the early landscape painters. And then, while I was drifting along the edge of Andromeda, I witnessed something extraordinary. A white dwarf star collapsed in the area I'd just started to paint, and when it did, I perceived a new color. Carson paused. A faraway look crossed his time-worn face. I was disappointed. Artists were finding new shades and tints every day. "What sort of color?" I said. "Reddish? Bluish?" Carson stared at me with contempt. "You idiot. I'm talking about a completely new color. Different from any of the known colors." I laughed. "That's impossible. All colors are mixtures of the three primary colors of light. But that's only because of the wavelengths of light emitted by common suns and stars," he argued. "This collapse emitted a new wavelength. It was unlike any other color known to exist." Carson's revelation left me speechless for a few moments, but then I found my voice. "What was it like?" "Exquisite. Beautiful, but I can't tell you." He shook his head sadly. "There are no words in any known language to describe it. There's nothing to compare it to. I can see it in my head. But I can't put it into words. That's why I'm here. Trying to recreate it." At last, Carson's disappearance was starting to make sense. But something still puzzled me. "But why are you doing it on this overgrown asteroid?" "Because after trying for years, I found out the rocks on this protoplanet contain minerals that don't exist anywhere else in the known universe. I'm sure that some combination of them will produce the new pigment, which I'm going to call Chromanova." I didn't need to ask why he'd chosen the name, a mixture of ancient Greek and Latin, meaning new color. "How many combinations have you tried so far?" I asked. Carson consulted a notebook lying next to the old microscope before replying. 43,745. "That all happened 10 years ago. But for the last three, I've been alone. My good friend Laris passed away in his sleep one night. Never having achieved his dream to create Chromanova. I carried his body outside the dome, and let him float away to join the celestial spheres he loved so much. I have now reached combination number 55,292, and still haven't seen a new color. But I'm determined to carry on. It's the least I can do for my mentor. My inspiration. Because Laris's obsession has become mine. And I can't allow his incredible discovery to die with him. As he insisted countless times during the years I knew him. It's only a matter of time."